Welcome to the Brooks Rehabilitation Podcast. My name is Tracy Davis. This episode, we are talking research. I think our guest today did a fantastic job of breaking down research, even for us non-clinical people like myself. So Dr. Jason Benicek is the clinical research scientist for Brooks, and he's also the director of the Brooks Rehabilitation University of Florida College of Public Health and Health Professions Research Collaboration. We have a long history of collaborating with University of Florida, and a lot of amazing studies have come from that. So Jason does a great job of explaining that for us. And Dr. Rain Osborne is the director of research at Brooks. So we get into a whole lot of topics about how certain studies come about, how they conduct them, how they disseminate the information so that, you know, not just us here at Brooks benefit from the things that they learn, but also the whole world of rehabilitation. And also we talk a little bit about how, why it's so important what Brooks does here, about how we find research so valuable, and we want to be on that cutting edge of pushing the industry forward. And that's why we invest so much into research. So before we get into the podcast, I just wanted to encourage you to consider sharing the podcast. I know that we have a lot of people listening that are employees of Brooks, or maybe you are just in the rehabilitation world of some sort. We would really appreciate you sharing the podcast, leaving a rating for us on whatever podcast platform that you listen on. We would really appreciate that. And also connect with us on social media. You can find us on Instagram, LinkedIn, Facebook, YouTube, all the major platforms. We're not on TikTok. I don't think we have a need to be on TikTok, but you can find us in all of those platforms at Brooks Rehab. Again, I want to thank Dr. Jason Benicek and Dr. Rain Osborne for taking the time to be on the podcast. Let's get right into it. Thanks for joining me, guys. If you guys want to introduce yourself to everyone listening, Rain, you want to go ahead and start?
So I'm Rain Osborne, the director of research for Brooks Rehabilitation, physical therapist by training, and also have a doctorate in educational leadership.
Thank you. Jason?
Yeah, I'm Jason Benicek. I am part of the research collaboration that we have between Brooks Rehabilitation and University of Florida. I'm a research assistant professor in the Department of Physical Therapy at the University of Florida and a clinical research scientist at Brooks. And like Rain, I was also trained as a physical therapist.
Let's just start a little bit, like, what got you here? Like, what a little bit, like, going through some of your school, and why did you want to become a physical therapist? Maybe how did that lead you into research?
Yeah, so as far as, you know, becoming a physical therapist, you know, when I graduated undergrad, was really planning on going towards medicine. Had a lot of interest there, but also had a lot of background in physical training and just working with changing the body through exercise and kind of the rehabilitation model, and really liked that. And as I started shadowing a lot of different physicians and physical therapists and things, I just was really impressed by the field and the opportunities that I thought it had for really for the future of societal needs, and that rehabilitation model being something that I thought was sort of missing to a large extent, and a lot of opportunity to grow in that area, both personally and professionally.
Great. And then how did that lead you into research?
So for a number of years, I started out as a clinician. Was in clinical practice for about 10 years. About 4 years in, I did a residency here with Brooks in orthopedic physical therapy. Followed that up with a fellowship in orthopedic manual physical therapy, also here at Brooks through our Institute of Higher Learning. Then as I was in practice and really seeing the changes in myself as a clinician and the outcomes that was having on my patients, wanting to help spread that kind of that knowledge and help others be able to take better care of their patients. So I moved more into an education sort of direction at that point. And so for a number of years, I was the coordinator for the orthopedic residency program. Also started doing some teaching at the University of North Florida in their doctor of physical therapy program. And, really started valuing the education, role, and wanted to go further in that direction, which is why I pursued my doctorate in education. And through that, really started getting a lot more involved in research, and obviously being trained as a researcher. And the opportunity came up here at Brooks. There was some transitions in the research program at the time, and thought that there would be a really good opportunity to help you know, further integrate our research program and clinical practice and bring those two things together, because I think that's just a really good model for how we, you know, continue to advance in the field and have better outcomes for our patients. And so took on that that role in research, and that was, I guess, in 2015. And then, you know, ever since, just continuing to try and build that program.
Has it really been since 2015?
It has.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. Can't believe it's been that long. Jason, what about you? What kind of got you on the path and landed you doing research and education?
So my initial plans were to be a relief pitcher for the New York Yankees.
Me too.
And, yeah. And that didn't work out. So what got me into physical therapy? Initially, I actually graduated with a biology degree and worked as a chemist for about 3 years, and decided then that, you know, I always had an interest in physical therapy, and I submitted my applications and eventually got accepted into the University of St. Augustine. And a lot of it probably came from either, you know, past experiences with family and physical therapy, or, you know, high school or college sports as an athlete. After that, working as a clinician for about 5 years, I was really, I guess you could say, frustrated with a lot of the things that were going on in clinical practice, and a lot of the confusion and kind of no clear direction in terms of some of the clinical decisions. And I think that really interested me. So I then pursued a fellowship back at St. Augustine again. And I really wasn't totally convinced that, you know, I wanted to go ahead and go get the PhD. Jim Vitti down at St. Augustine actually did a little help in convincing me that, you know, I could do something like that. So he introduced me to my what would have become my future doctoral mentor, Steve George. And so be it. After the fellowship, we started that program, and 5 years later, you know, one of my initial goals, I remember talking with Steve during the first year, and he kind of asking me, you know, where do I see myself when I'm done? And I saw myself actually in this position with Brooks.
Really?
But at the time, that position wasn't there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we thought it might not be that realistic. But we kind of kept those discussions going over the years, and the position was created. So it was actually a pretty neat experience along the way.
How many years have you been in your position?
So this will be year 9.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, 2020. This is year 9.
That's awesome. Yeah, it's funny that you guys talk about like your journey, because a lot of people talk about when I've asked other physical therapists specifically, and it usually seems to be someone in the family had an injury, and then they watched them go through and had watched what the therapist did and like the amazing recovery they made, or some sort of a sports background, athletic training, exercise kind of a background. So a lot of therapists seem to kind of go down that direction. It makes total sense. So Rain, since, from my perspective, since you've been, like you said, since 2015, research has really grown a ton. And you guys have had a ton of recognition over the years, you know, like nationwide from all over the place. What's the background of the research program, and how has it changed and morphed and developed over time?
Yeah. And, you know, I really came in at a good time. You know, so yes, there's been, you know, what seems to be a lot of growth, but really it's just recognition of a lot of things that were, you know, already in the works, you know, when I came into that. So Brooks, you know, really got started in research back in the late 90s, and some of the faculty from University of Florida would come and conduct research here. And then in 2010, Brooks started the Brooks Clinical Research Center. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, the effort there was to try to make Brooks a little bit more of an intellectual contributor to the research and
right.
sort of generator of that research, as opposed to just a site where research was conducted.
Sure.
That over time morphed into what's now the Brooks UF PHHP, which is the College of Public Health and Health Professions at University of Florida. So we now have a formal partnership that started in 2013, which Dr. Benichek here is a part of, and he can speak more to that here in a moment. But, you know, that work that started in 2013 really laid the foundation for where we are today, and, you know, and the researchers that are a part of that collaboration, you know, building a research agenda, building the program really from the ground up, you know, so that took a number of years.
Sure.
And so then, you know, when I came in 2015, you know, that was really one of the first things that was obvious, was that we have some really great work going on here. And a lot of what's needed on the front end is just helping people understand, you know, the great work that is going on,
right,
and then build, you know, more support for that. And so we've done that, and then, you know, continue to expand from there into, you know, trying to reach out and have more collaboration with our local academic institutions, UNF, Jacksonville University, and, you know, just really build a collaborative model of research where we're able to bring in, you know, the research expertise and match that with our clinical expertise here at Brooks. And we think that's a pretty good model.
Sure. Zooming in a little bit on what you said, do you, I know this was a little bit before you were in research, but is there anything that you know of that kind of triggered Brooks to say, hey, we don't want to just be recipients of the research being done, but we want to actually be on the leading edge of the research and like moving the research, like the rehabilitation industry forward through research at Brooks?
Yeah, I mean, I think it just goes back to the overall, you know, mission of Brooks and
right.
You know, really trying to, you know, do the best for our patients and provide the patients that we care for with, you know, the latest best care that's possible in rehabilitation.
Sure.
And so, you know, obviously, you know, you can wait around for the research to catch up with the clinical practice, or you can, you know, be a part of that process. And I think the leadership of Brooks wisely said, you know, yeah, let's be on the front edge of that and, sure, and contribute.
Yeah, I mean, it makes total sense. It fits, like you said, fits totally in with our mission, vision, and values. And I've never known Brooks to not be on that, on where we are with research, like trying to push the industry forward. So that's very interesting to hear that, set your side of the story of that. Jason, you're the interim director of the Brooks UF PHHP collaboration. And Rain said mentioned that a little bit ago. Can you tell me more about the collaboration and why the collaboration was formed with, because Brooks has all kinds of UF employees here that graduated from UF. Did either of you go to UF? No?
I did.
You did go to UF. So, and I've, you know, there's like a million employees here that graduated from UF. So we seem to have a lot of connections there in multiple ways. But tell us a little bit more about that collaboration.
Sure. Yeah. You know, when the collaboration was initially developed, there were some really key players that were involved with the development. Michael Spiegel, who's no longer with Brooks. Obviously, Doug Baer was involved on the Brooks side.
Sure.
Dr. Michael Perry, who's the dean of the College of Public Health and Health Professions at the University of Florida and the physical therapy chair. Dr. Krista Vandenborn. Those were really the four key players in terms of developing the program. And, you know, I think when the program was developed, the collaboration was developed, the key thing was that we were able to link Brooks and what Brooks has to offer, their sophisticated way of delivering care with their patients, but also with the resources that we have at the University of Florida in terms of researchers, resources, and also the doctoral students that we're training to either be clinicians, and like you said, Tracy, a lot of them are actually in our system right now as clinicians, but also future researchers. And a lot of those future researchers are involved in the collaboration. One of them actually just defended her dissertation, and a lot of her work was done here at Brooks. So it was real important to us that it was a true collaboration. And it wasn't where a academic research institution is coming into a health system and quote-unquote using them for their patient data and their clinicians in terms of collecting the data. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of what we do, the investigators that are part of the collaboration, is we really try to include Brooks clinicians, some very early in the research development process, for their intellectual contributions. That's, I think, important to all of us, you know, really in developing research, conducting the research, and then also disseminating the research. And that's a lot different than just having clinicians collect data. So that's one thing that we're kind of proud about. And that was, I think, the thought about the collaboration going into it.
That's great. I mean, it seems like a fantastic partnership, and I've been at some of the events that you guys have where people are talking about things that they learned during their research that they've been doing at Brooks for whatever period of time it was. Usually it's pretty long research studies, right? It's usually, some of them are, you know, years long or something like that. Like how does that happen? How did they determine like the length that maybe a research study needs to be done?
Yeah, I think all studies are really different depending on what type of study it is and what type of question it is. But, you know, you can even expand it out even a little broader than that. And, you know, when the actual study starts and then completes, a lot also happens before that and after that. Mm-hmm. So, for example, we actually just completed a project that was funded by the Patient-Centered Outcomes Research Institute, PCORI, where we really kind of developed infrastructure and capacity to include stakeholders in terms of just developing research questions. Mm-hmm. And those stakeholders included patients, they included clinicians from the Brooks system, as well as other stakeholders. And that was before we even started a study. And right. We still haven't started that study. Mm-hmm. We're still trying to seek funding for that. But the study would then be conducted, and then what happens after, I think, is really probably the most important part related to the collaboration, because that's really what it's all about. And I know this is really important to Doug when we have our conversations with him is, you know, we do some really good work in terms of research at Brooks, but how is it impacting clinical practice? So really taking the next step in terms of how our research findings can impact clinical practice. And I think sometimes, you know, folks need to be a little patient in terms of, you know, that often doesn't happen right after the completion of a study.
Sure.
It often takes time to integrate things into clinical practice, and that's really a different line of research, if you will. So I know we are really interested in trying to move forward with some of those types of studies in the future as well.
Great.
And just to add on to that, I mean, I think that's a great example. You know, really the integrative model that we're, you know, talking about, and, you know, some of that impact on clinical practice. You know, like Jason said, we had, you know, a number of clinicians who were in those meetings and just being a part of the discussions. And, you know, what you hear from them is, you know, it starts to change the way they just even think about mm-hmm. Practice and what they ask. And so, you know, some of those are kind of intangible and they're difficult to measure the, you know, the impact, but even those interactions, you know, really influenced, you know, how our system thinks about what we're doing.
Right. So how would you describe the focus areas for Brooks research, and what are some of the examples of the projects that you guys have been working on from long ago to now, currently, maybe something coming up?
Yeah, I mean, I think the two big buckets that we would look at is our core programmatic research. And so that's the research that's being done by, you know, our Brooks investigators that are part of the collaboration, myself, others that are truly part of the Brooks system. And then we have what we would consider our aligned partnership, research, and that's where we work with other researchers that share interest, and you know they have research that either maybe the ideas are generated from Brooks or maybe the ideas generated from the researcher, but ultimately there's an alignment and true partnership, like that intellectual contribution that Jason referred to earlier.
Sure.
So those would be really our two main buckets of research, and then within those core programs. Currently, we kind of have three core programs. One is the musculoskeletal program, which Jason leads. The other is the neuromuscular program, which is led by another of the collaboration investigators, Dr. Emily Fox. And then the learning and development, which is the program I kind of oversee. And you know, we can talk a little bit more about some of those studies. I'll just mention some of the neuromuscular right now since Dr. Fox isn't here, but then I'll let Jason talk about his studies. Mm-hmm. You know, I think one of the more recent but interesting studies that's going on, we were working with Cyberdyne, which is a organization that has developed, I'm going to call it an exoskeleton just so you kind of have a picture in your head, but it's really much more than just an exoskeleton system.
We've had them on the podcast. They talked about it before, so yeah.
Oh, great. Yeah. Okay.
They kind of talked about the whole origin story of how we got the HAL and all that kind of thing.
Oh, good. Okay.
Yeah.
So you've heard that. So we've had some of that research.
We didn't talk about the research too specifically, but we just had them on to kind of talk about what it is and what they do.
Perfect. So that's, you know, that's interesting. That's certainly something cutting edge that, is really unique to our research program here. They're also doing some work on backwards walking, which is something that's relatively novel in rehabilitation and looking at studies on how does, training backwards walking reduce fall risk and things like that after stroke. And so that's something that's, you know, relatively new and has the potential to, you know, really take, you know, therapists down maybe a different avenue of rehab than they've thought about before. You know, some of the other stuff that's going on is Dr. Fox has a large grant from the Department of Defense that's related to hypoxia training, which is short burst of low oxygen training. And the idea is that it's kind of like, it's kind of similar to, you know, people go and ride bikes in the mountains or things like that in the low oxygen environments. Well, you know, there's some, you know, basic science research that has shown that that's really helpful in priming the system for making changes and recovery after things like a stroke or, you know, spinal cord injury, those types of conditions. And so, you know, our group is, you know, working hard at now translating some of that basic science into clinical practice with actual patients and seeing, you know, in the research environment, in the laboratory environment, you know, does this actually make a difference in the recovery with patients? So that's really exciting.
Yeah.
And, you know, and we also have some work going on around, you know, what happens after care. So we have a stroke wellness program here at Brooks and, you know, looking at intensity training and how do we really effectively continue patients after they've received their formal therapies and now they're in, you know, more of a community wellness type program. You know, what type of exercises and intensity of exercises do they need to be doing in order to, you know, really get the optimal benefits out of those things?
Like even after their therapy.
Yeah.
Like, so this is like kind of on their own or they go to the gym or whatever, like stuff they need to just continue to do to keep their recovery going.
That's right. So those are you know, some of the projects. And there's a number of others. I mean, that's really, you know, highlighting kind of the tip of the iceberg with those projects. But that's some of the ones that are going on in the neuromuscular. And Jason, I don't know if you want to talk a little bit about the musculoskeletal.
Before we move to the musculoskeletal, I just wanted to make sure we acknowledge Dr. Dorian Rose as well. She's part of the neuromuscular team. And you know, I think one of the examples I like to use in terms of the impact of the collaboration and how it's really, you know, impacted what we're doing here at Brooks is like, I kind of think about Lou DeMarc. When Lou DeMarc was going through his residency program here at Brooks, he had a case report of a patient and he used backwards walking, right? He didn't develop the technique, but he published a case report on it. And he then eventually collaborated with Dr. Dorian Rose, who's one of the collaboration investigators, and kind of related to one of the studies Rain was talking about before. They actually went on and received some small initial funding, and now Rain, I think they kind of, you know, are at the next level where they got some more funding. So they're kind of, you know, a lot of this started off with Lou's single patient case report during the residency program. So that's what I'd like to use as an example in terms of how we actually truly do collaborate with our clinicians here.
Yeah, I remember walking down the hallway one time and Lou was doing having someone walk backwards, and I was like, that's interesting. No, I've never seen that before, and then I found out what he was doing.
Yeah, so in terms of what we're really focusing on in the musculoskeletal arm, and the musculoskeletal investigators really consist of myself, Dr. Joel Bialoski, and Dr. Mehr Alpatu, we're doing several different studies. I will really just focus on a couple of them. And one of the things, one of the studies that I think, you know, could potentially have a significant impact on clinical practice, and if I kind of think about similar studies that we've done in the past, is the Start Back Screening Tool when it was developed from the folks, Jonathan Hill and the folks at Keele University, and the impact that using the Start Back tool has on patients with low back pain. We have an ongoing study now that's funded by the Foundation for Physical Therapy Research, and we're collaborating with the University of Southern California. And we're looking at a new tool that the folks from Keele developed to be used for a wider spectrum of musculoskeletal pain. And that's always one of the big questions from clinicians is, can I use the Start Back tool for my patients with neck pain or shoulder pain? And, you know, the true answer is no, because that's not how it was developed and we haven't tested it. We're testing that new tool now through Brooks with our orthopedic residents and then with the University of Southern California's orthopedic residents. So hopefully that can be another opportunity to really have a significant impact on clinical practice. The other one that we can touch on that I kind of mentioned earlier was our study that involved the multiple stakeholders, where the patients played a vital role in really kind of, you know, coming to the final product and identifying areas that we should maybe think about focusing on with future musculoskeletal related studies. So that was something that I think we'll be able to use for future grants and developing future research questions. And then I guess the final study that we really just recently completed was an implementation study where we implemented clinical practice guidelines for the neck and low back with physical therapists. And that study was funded by the Center on Health Services Training and Research, or COSTAR. And we also had a clinician, Brian Haggis, play a vital role in that in terms of training the clinicians. Rain was also involved with that study. And implementation science, implementation studies are a different beast, if you will, because what we're ultimately doing is really trying to change behaviors of clinicians. And it's challenging, but in my weird mind, it's also very exciting. So we learned a lot from the clinicians in that study in terms of behaviors and really identified a few more barriers that we maybe not have thought about in the past. So we're kind of in the process of getting ready to submit that for peer review publication as well.
That's great. I'm just curious how, whenever you guys, since, you know, these are such amazing studies and things like that, and I know some of these are expensive to do, especially over time. How does research go about trying to get grants for things, and, or what's the interest in whatever the organization is in saying, we will give you money to research this thing? Like, how does that work?
Yeah, so there's a couple of levels of that. One, so Brooks has definitely invested, a number of dollars and continues to invest dollars every year in, you know, what we would consider sort of pilot funding. And so, you know, these big grants, you know, like we're talking about in these big studies, you know, often in order to be successful, you know, for the researchers to be successful in being awarded those grants, there needs to be some preliminary work that shows that, you know, yes, this can be done, and you know, we're seeing some trends here.
Right.
And so, you know, we supply some of that funding, you know, to support our researchers. And then, you know, from there, then, you know, that's really one of the important pieces of the partnership, is because of their expertise and, you know, knowledge and training in that area, they're able to then go on and, you know, submit for additional funding through more external agencies. And you know, Jason, I know you've had a lot of experience with that. I don't know if you want to talk about that end of.
Yeah, I can talk about some of the external mechanisms that we've pursued in the past. Before we go there, though, I want to really reinforce the point that Rain made about Brooks and the opportunities they provide. A lot of people might not know this, but, you know, when I was doing my PhD, my dissertation was funded by Brooks. Mm. So, you know, I'm always grateful to Brooks and, you know, Doug Baer and his support that he provided me. You know, without that work, I probably wouldn't have the position that I have now. Mm. So, yeah, definitely very supportive of us. And that's not common with a lot of health systems in terms of how many opportunities they provide in terms of funding, internal funding, because let's face it, research requires dollars for a lot of things that some people might not really recognize the need for those dollars. So extremely important, especially for those pilot studies. Mm-hmm. And when you submit grants for the larger funding external agencies like NIH or PCORI, you need those pilot studies. You need that pilot data, or you probably won't be very successful in your grant
application. Because it's kind of showing that there's something here. We need more money in order to see this out further.
Yeah. Yeah. And even to conduct those pilot studies, even if it is 10 participants, money's needed for time for the staff, for the clinicians, and maybe to reimburse the study participants. So definitely needed. But, you know, I think part of our role in the collaboration is really kind of what I like to say, and I've been reminded this is really what I should be after, is really going for the bigger prizes, right? So really submitting those grants that are, let's face it, they're difficult to be awarded those really large grants. But, you know, we often have multiple times a year to kind of submit those grants. A lot of times it's three times a year to submit grants, possibly resubmit them. And there's other smaller foundational grants that we have opportunities for too. But, you know, one of our challenges, and I think one of the things that all of the investigators really try to do, is kind of diversify our portfolios a little bit. So we don't just isolate ourselves to one specific area. We can kind of branch out. And I think that's the great thing about working with a system like this is you have clinicians that have other interests. So, you know, you kind of have multiple research teams. We all share one common goal, but we also have our specific interests. Sure. So, yeah, it's been a great experience.
How do some of the ideas come about for, I mean, I would imagine you just, you have to stay pretty curious about how we're currently doing things and maybe let's try this, let's try that. Or maybe a certain patient comes in with something very unique. How do some of the ideas come up about, like I know you said Lou didn't come up with the actual technique, but like how does that come out? Hey, let's have the stroke patient start walking backwards. Is it just kind of like, let's try this and then maybe it kind of slowly grows from there? Or do you guys maybe have meetings on things of like, you know, let's try this study out? Or I'm just curious, like from the infancy of some of these ideas, how does that start?
So that's, you know, I think some of the work that Dr. Emily Fox is doing now with one of the studies that Rain talked about related to breathing was something that really, you know, was probably had a lot of the previous work was done with animals, and now we're trying to kind of translate that to some humans. So that would be one example, and that's definitely not my area of expertise. So I'm going to kind of stop talking about that now. But the example that I like to kind of share based on the work that we do is, you know, the idea that came from our stakeholder group, right? So shared decision making is a concept that's been around for a while, right? Our patients didn't come up with this. I didn't come up with this, but it's really been studied and looked at for higher risk conditions such as cancer or cardiovascular disease. It's not really something that's common for looking at with musculoskeletal pain, but our patients told us, right? I obviously had an interest in it, but our patients told us that, you know, this is something that we should probably be doing because in their view, not mine, their perceptions about healthcare decisions a lot of times are quote unquote ignored. And really not considered. So I think that's an example of how we kind of, you know, start someplace and then kind of develop. And like I said, you know, we from that, we submitted grants and we continue to submit grants to kind of attract other external agencies. Mm-hmm. And that's always the challenge is, you know, attracting them to the idea.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, and I think going back to your example from Lou DeMarc and the backward walking, you know, to the point being that there are multiple ways that those, you know, kind of ideas come in. And, you know, not every idea that, you know, might come from, you know, a clinical setting is, you know, can take the same path that this one has. But I think that's the point of having those researchers that you can kind of bring the ideas to, and then, you know, they can link that idea to say, hey, yeah, this really is a gap in the literature and, you know, and know the science behind that a little bit better, and then take the ideas and form them into something that can really be a good, sure. You know, research. And then, you know, the only thing I want to, you know, point out when we're talking about funding and, you know, in research, you obviously spend a lot of time talking about that topic. You know, but I want to make sure that people understand that getting that funding and being successful in obtaining the funding, you know, that's really a measure of the quality and importance of the work that you're doing as a research program. And so when you look at our collaboration team and the funding that they've been able to, you know, obtain over the years, you know, as, you know, really four, now five investigators, you know, that the amount of funding that they've been awarded is just, you know, phenomenal. And it's not that the dollars makes it phenomenal. It's that it's valued by the scientific community and the, you know, rehab community to say, hey, this work is important and needs to be supported further.
Sure. And I think it's really awesome, like what you were saying, Jason, about just like that Brooks sees itself as not just a, you know, we do rehab, here we are, come to us, we know things, how to help you. But we actually are wanting to invest in the future of the industry of rehabilitation and helping, because you never know what got us to where the things we do as general practice now were probably not done maybe 10 years ago or more. So the research you guys are doing now, I mean, who knows how it could change the game in, you know, a year to 50 years from now. So that's, mm-hmm. that's really cool to think about that we're pushing the front edge forward. So it's good that Brooks invests in that. Since we have so many therapists and employees at Brooks and they're seeing, you know, tens of thousands of patients a year, how do you stay like connected with some of our employees, and like maybe they have ideas on certain things because they get maybe a patient in that could be something that could be a part of a research study, or how does that work as far as like just kind of working internally with our own employees? And
yeah, I mean, you know, the short of it is it comes down to relationship building. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Jason and Emily and Dorian, mm-hmm. and, you know, all the investigators, you know, they spend time, you know, outside of, you know, their individual research studies working with our residents, our residency programs, or being in the clinic and working with our, you know, different divisions, and forming those relationships. And I think that's, you know, really the core of it. And then it's just creating opportunities to, you know, for people, again, to think differently and to bring ideas to the table. You know, the PCORI example that Jason gave earlier is a great example of, you know, that. And that sort of stimulated, you know, research ideas. And then we also have had brought together groups of therapists with shared interest in, you know, outpatient orthopedic therapy to come together and just talk about what are some ideas that, you know, might be beneficial to clinical practice and also make, you know, useful research questions. You know, we see those same examples with Meryl Alapatu, and she's working with our women's health program and, you know, really developing. She's the newest member of the collaboration, but is also, you know, really working hard to develop sort of a line of research that, you know, that aligns with the clinical practice that we're doing here, and, you know, gets out and works with the clinicians that practice in that area and gets to know them.
How, and obviously this year has been different for obvious reasons, but as far as like going to conferences and things like that, like how do you stay, do you guys normally go to a lot of conferences and kind of get connected with other areas of the country or the world as far as rehabilitation goes? And I'm sure you go and speak at places all the time. So like, let's say this year didn't happen. What normally do you guys do to kind of stay connected to like the research rehabilitation community?
Yeah. Getting out, you know, getting out the word on the research that's going on and disseminating that work. I mean, that's really one of the core functions of, you know, research. It doesn't do anyone any good to just do the projects and, you know, and then move on. Right. You have to share that, you know, that gained knowledge. And so, yes, I mean, that's a core piece of what we do is, you know, go to conferences and present, publish the work that's done. You know, hold events here at Brooks. You know, mm-hmm. Normally we hold those 5 events a year. Like you said, we haven't been able to this year, but that's certainly a core function. And, you know, I think one of the, you know, the challenges with COVID has been obviously not being able to hold some of the events and the live things that we do, but it's also stimulated us to, you know, think a little bit differently about how might we you know, do that dissemination next year. And so, you know, we're having discussions on how do we create more of a virtual platform where we can reach a broader audience than even just our, you know, our internal, you know, folks here at Brooks or our local community, but how can we really reach out, you know, much broader than that, you know, nationally and invite others to hear about the work that's being done here.
Yeah, I think COVID's kind of opened my eyes up a little bit in terms of how some of this is, you know, work is being disseminated, you know, and primarily based on experiences with conferences, but then also a lot of the internal, you know, education, let's say, that we would provide as part of the IHL. You know, usually that would be done in person, but now it's all obviously a lot of it's done remotely. And I think having that platform and being able to communicate with folks on a more regular routine basis is something that a lot of times is a challenge, right? Rain talked before about the importance of relationship building with research related projects and kind of developing your team. It's very important, but it's also, let's face it, it's very time consuming. But it's important. So I think moving forward with the conferences, you know, I think we're going to probably see a lot more of those remote options in terms of dissemination. And it's you know, I think if you look back 15 years ago and you would go to your typical rehabilitation conference, and again, I go to a lot of physical therapy conferences, but you know, 15 years ago, you might have been lucky if you saw one or two posters from Brooks. You know, you go to those conferences now, and it's not uncommon to see like maybe 10, 15, or 20 posters from Brooks folks, Brooks folks are giving, you know, platform presentations, educational sessions. And that's really a, you know, short period of time. 10, 15 years ago, that wasn't common, but now it's kind of the norm. So that's something that I'm very proud of. And, you know, I used to talk with Michael Spiegel about, you know, the culture, which is another part of the collaboration, right? One of the metrics, if you will. How do you measure, you know, the culture? And if we're going to change it, how are we going to measure that? And that was one of the metrics we talked about, was really just our folks here at Brooks and their ability to kind of engage in conferences or other other events like that. So, mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, I mean, that's great. Well, as we're wrapping up here, where do you guys see the future of research and research at Brooks? Where do you see it going?
Yeah, I mean, I think from my perspective, one is continuing to strengthen the collaboration. You know, we're in the, what's that, seventh, eighth year of the PHHB collaboration now. It's been, you know, super successful up to this point. And, you know, and I think it's one of those things where success begets success. And, you know, I just expect that to continuing to grow and, you know, that we would continue to support that. And then building those additional you know, relationships with other researchers in the community. I think those are two really important things for us as an institution. And then, you know, increasingly finding opportunities to integrate that research into the system, kind of like you were, you know, talking about earlier and you know, the changing practice. You know, it takes time for that to happen. You know, just because one study, you know, has a positive result doesn't mean that all of a sudden, yes, we need to put this into clinical practice across the board, that, mm-hmm. you know, that it builds, you know, over time. And so sure. A lot of the work that's been done, you know, as that continues to grow, you know, when it's ready now, you know, that's when now's the time to then start putting it into clinical practice and testing and making sure that, yes, this is, we're seeing the effects. So I think that's a really exciting opportunity for us as these programs continue to grow. You know, and really building on the relationships, like we were just talking about, with the clinicians, and looking for more opportunities for those clinicians to be contributors to the research that's going on. Again, it just elevates the thinking of practice, elevates the, you know, quality of practice. It raises the bar for what we're doing here. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think as our activity continues to grow, those opportunities will as well. And then, you know, like we were just talking about with the dissemination, that finding more ways to really, you know, let others know locally, nationally, what's going on here and how Brooks and the investment that we're making in research, how that's progressing and really contributing to the field.
Yeah, I think, you know, obviously one of the most important things from my perspective and is being more successful with the external research funding. Because a lot of times, you know, that's the way us as investigators are often judged, critique, if you will, at the end of the year. So, you know, we are successful, but continuing to be successful and even more successful than we are now. The other thing that was kind of related to one of Rain's comments was, I think we need to be innovative and strategic in terms of how we involve the clinicians in future projects. That in itself sometimes is a challenge. How do you do that in terms of time? Who pays for the time? I think there are ways that we can involve our clinical people in the Brooks system to be involved in projects on multiple levels. We just have to, like I said, we have to be innovative in how we do go about that process. Because I will tell you, there's a lot of clinicians that are interested in participating. We just have to provide them with those opportunities.
Well, I think this has been great. Thank you guys for your time. I really appreciate it. I think this is going to help people really understand a whole lot more about not just what you guys do, but what the role of rehabilitation research is and how it benefits our patients. And, you know, because we keep having more and more patients to see. You know, I know this year has been a little bit different, but we've still seen a ton of patients. And, you know, like what you guys are doing, it's going to be interesting to see, like, even years to come, how it's kind of shaping the world of rehabilitation.
Yeah, thanks, Tracy, thanks for giving us this opportunity. We're always kind of, you know, just this in itself is really disseminating the research we do here, I think, is an important message that sometimes is hidden. So I think anytime we can kind of talk about what we do, is a good thing. So yeah. I think we both kind of thank you for that.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thanks for coming on. I appreciate it.